Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. Today I'm with Julio Martinez, co-founder and CEO of Abacum, software that helps CFOs sleep better and spreadsheets cry in a good way. $105 million raised, $60 million Series B led by Scale VP, 100 plus people across Barcelona, New York, London, serving hundreds of companies in 31 countries. He once dreamed about being a paella chef. Now he plays P&L with fewer burns and a lot more clarity. Welcome to the show, Julio.
Marcin, thank you so much. It's a blast to be here.
Amazing. Let's talk about it because especially the last part, the whole thing is interesting. But I'm like, paella chef, come on, what's happening? You wanted to be a paella cook. What's the moment you realized your real recipe was, you know, FP&A, not arroz? See, I know some words in Spanish.
You know how it is, but hey, looks can be deceiving. So I'm still, my mission for the perfect paella is still strong. I keep on trying. But I had spent so many years in finance, right? And I was very nerdy about anything corporate finance, anything FP&A. So at some point in time in my journey, and when I was bleeding in the head, probably in you know, lack of innovation, lack of product innovation, exposed to legacy products, I just found almost impossible to, you know, not switch gears and then focus on building something truly meaningful for the finance community.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. That sounds very cool because you're kind of solving your own problem, right? Like, because you said, like, we build the product we wished we had. So actually, what kind of, like, what pain made you and your co-founders say, like, yeah, we have to fix this?
Totally. My co-founder and I have spent, combined close to 40 years in finance, right? So, like, again, bleeding in the head. And as you said, we are building the product we wish we had. But in reality, what we do is fairly simple, right? And we always identify three pain points that are critical. Like, first is most finance teams tend to spend half of their time, if not more, manually cleaning data, right? So Abacum is giving that time back, that productivity back to finance teams. Then the second key pain is usually finance teams can access real-time data and be agile and keep up with the business speed, you know, surfacing insights fast enough. So we at Abacum power that agility, power that confidence. And the third classic pain that finance teams face is, you know, most finance teams feel they are very siloed. They cannot be a good partner to the business. They cannot collaborate effectively, have impact, right? So those are the buzzwords that I hear all the time from customers, right? When they share their frustration. And then this is also what we do, right? So we enable them with collaborative workflows so that they can be closer to the business and be more impactful.
Nice. So Julio, can you pitch Abacum to, you know, a CFO who says, Excel is fine?
Which is a classic, right?
Yeah.
And of course, Excel is fine, right? And I get it. Like, I used to model without touching the mouse, right? And I was proud about it, which is very embarrassing in retrospect, right? So I get it. Like, Excel is fine. And Excel is fine until it isn't. So spreadsheets are awesome. It's awesome software, right? It's difficult to beat. A lot of flexibility and this and that. And then we master in finance. We are coders. We are developers, only that in Excel syntax, right? So, like, we master that language. It's our comfort zone. We enjoy that flexibility. You know, we build our macros. If you're a bit nerdy, this and that, and things are improving. I get it, right? But hey, there comes a point in time in your complexity trajectory of any business where things start breaking up. And while you can, I strongly recommend use a spreadsheet. Don't fix what it works, right? That's why we never went into the SMB segment, right? Because, hey, with the spreadsheets, you probably can do an amazing job. right? But there is a point in time in complexity when you are in several geographies, when you have several product lines, when you have several customer segments and multiple legal entities, and your volumes of data are skyrocketing in today's world where, you know, hey, data is so abundant, right? At that point in time, you want to be thinking of upgrading your systems, right? Mm-hmm. And then usually my provocation to some CFOs is going to be, hey, litmus test, right? So start taking a temperature. And it's okay. So, you know, if the answers are no to these questions, like, it's okay. But hey, if you feel your team has a lack of productivity, mm-hmm. right? So you hire a bunch of very smart people, but they are doing monkey's work. If you feel finance, your team is not keeping up with the agility that is required in the business, right? So you ask a simple question, the CEO asks some questions, and then it takes days to run a scenarios. Like meeting a deadline in reporting feels like, you know, all-nighter, you know, working on the over the weekend. Like, hey, like probably something is off, right? Oftentimes we find teams where the confidence is eroded as well. So that's another relevant question. Is your board identifying some mistakes in the report? Do you fully trust the data? Because some teams, they don't fully trust their data, right? Mm-hmm. And then the fourth question is usually, and the point is, hey, when they feel siloed, mm-hmm. when they feel, yeah, I'm behind the desk, I'm with my models, I'm with my spreadsheets, and mm-hmm. I build this magic thing, but then, you know, nobody cares. Like, I'm not influence any decision, right? So I think those are, you know, we need to look at ourselves in the mirror and be very realistic about, hey, are we building the finance function that we really want to build to be truly powerful? Mm-hmm.
Nice. Very insightful. I like it. Julio, I was just thinking, because since we are, you know, already at the spreadsheet topic, give me your best spreadsheet horror story in, like, I don't know, 5 sentences, and how Avakum would have stopped it.
Yeah. Look, I've shared very openly this in the past, right? When I was earlier in my career, right, I took a lot of pride on excellence and building for a lot of complexity in spreadsheets. And we can get back to that topic later, but basically building a lot of modeling complexity that I thought it was perfect. And, you know, with a lot of modeling precision, trying to mm-hmm. solve for accuracy and God knows what, when in reality, you know, that became a model that it was, you know, very difficult to maintain. People could not work on it. Timelines, right? So then you have a timeline, and then, you know, you spend your all night or trying to fix spreadsheets, mm-hmm. You know, getting into that very low leverage territory where you are solving for complexity. And, you know, I had many nightmares with, you know, some of my earlier solutions or model trying to cope with a level of complexity. Hey, with Avakum to start with, like, that would really have stopped, right? Because you can build a lot of complexity if you want to. You can build a lot of massive complexity in a way easier way. So way easier to maintain. A lot of people can touch the same model without things breaking, which is critical already. But in any case, I always invite people to solve for simplicity. But maybe more on that later. But definitely Avakum will have solved for a lot of that.
Mm. Julio, the number one headcount trap you keep rescuing teams from. What's the fix?
Look, I think it's hiding fast without the basis of hiring fast, without a strong foundation to do that. I think the real trap is when we feel overconfident about the business, or when some of our customers have feel overconfident about the business, and they don't have a real connectivity between the operational KPIs and the financials and a deeper understanding of the business. And then they solve for two simple outcomes, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine, I need to hire people to sell, right? So I need sales capacity and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But then they are not truly understanding, for instance, how strong is their pipeline generation motion and how able they will be to really deliver on, you know, the outcomes that they are trying to solve for when hiring. So mm-hmm. this is something we've seen again and again, and that we definitely see in today's environment as well.
That's cool. And Julio, see, I'm starting to call you Julio now. Julio, what's the one assumption teams, you know, like overestimate in scenarios, like, and maybe one they routinely ignore?
Look, particularly on scenarios, I'm going to go back to the simplicity and complexity question. So, and I think this is a big topic in finance, right? So some other folks that are not finance professionals don't fully, but probably us and any operator can relate to this. Oftentimes we build complexity in our systems, in our processes, in our models, because we are trying to solve for, you know, accuracy, and we feel that we're going to fix increasing business complexity with more complexity, when in reality, you need to refocus the business on simplicity. Yeah. And that is true when it comes to finance processes and finance models and forecasting and scenarios, but also when, you know, I think, generally speaking, in company building, you are scaling the company and then you move from 10 to 50 to 100 to 200, 500 people, 1,000 people. Like, of course, you need to enrich your systems, but it's very tempted to get into complexity. And that's most of the time a mistake.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Julio, I was thinking, you know, let's talk about AI, of course, because AI is the most, like...
I didn't see this coming.
Yeah, I didn't see this coming. How? Hey, like, he pulled the AI out of his sleeve. I know. But, you know, so let's talk about AI without the magic act. Tell me one place it makes finance superhuman, and one place you keep human on purpose.
Look, when it comes to AI and at least in our product, what we enable people to get to, you know, the superpowers we offer people is AI and also machine learning is 24/7 monitoring data, detecting anomalies, detecting patterns, and surfacing insights or exceptions, or, you know, so the pattern recognition and the insights that you can get at the data layer is definitely something that, you know, how fast you can classify data, you know, when it was a manual process before, that is giving people superpowers and is enhancing a lot the impact that finance teams can have, right? Making them way more productive, but also way more insightful. So that is, you know, this is where you want to lean in. Look, what we need to keep human is the decision-making process.
Yeah.
So we are seeing not only finance, but probably you tell me, right? But in many occasions, AI is going to be a huge force multiplier for the finance team, but it's not a good proxy for decision making. The amount of context that the finance team bring into the table from different conversations, understanding the strategy, understanding the business, understanding the, you know, the QBRs, like the conversations with the product team, the next product launches, this and that, connecting all the dots, checking for common sense before that goes to the management team, the CEO, the board of directors. Like, that you want to keep very, very human. We see AI falling very short. And hey, I'm not sure if this is going to be continuing. In 2 years, things might have improved. I don't see at an XR, to be honest, and a substitute for that.
Yeah. I mean, so we kind of, we were laughing at the AI, like, that the AI is like, you didn't see that coming. But honestly, we almost every podcast we keep talking about it. But it's the thing right now. But I think like in like 10 years from now, like no one will talk about AI anymore. You know, it's going to be just like, I don't know, like Uber or internet. It's just going to be so, it's going to be so normal that, no one's like, hey, AI is doing this. Hey, AI is doing that. Like, it's just going to be like, obviously, no one will even talk about it in 10 years. So it's like kind of a pleasure, kind of a how do they call it? That it's a blessing and a curse to talk about it right now, you know, because it's all happening now and it's changing now. But yeah, it's kind of, I would rather take it as a blessing that, like we're in this transition, like it's happening now, we're like doing it. And then, by the time, like, I don't know, my daughter is a grown up, then it's just going to be like, what do you mean? Like, no one will talk about it anymore. But anyways, Julio, I know that you're doubling down on the US recently, or maybe not recently, maybe generally. I wonder, like, you know, like EU, like Europe versus US buyers, like what each side obsesses over that, you know, the other doesn't.
Yeah, so it's a bit mixed, but if we were to simplify and generalize a little bit, because you have a little bit of this on both sides, but in general, and generalizations are always dangerous, but in general, I think on the European side, you see more finance teams solving for efficiency, solving for, hey, productivity gains, compliance, like that type of stuff. In the US, like the game is different, right? So they are solving for agility, for speed, for scale. So the questions they are trying to answer are different, right? So on the European side, it's mostly more about, hey, how I am leaner and how do I am more compliant and my processes. But CFOs in the US typically are more, hey, how can I enable the business to grow faster? How can I multiply my impact in the organization? So that level of ambition, that level of punch is, to be honest, still heavier in the US. And I think a lot of finance teams in Europe are catching up, right? Don't get me wrong. But if we were to generalize, that probably still applies.
Makes sense, Julio. You know, you just raised big, right? Like it was like $60 million round. Like what's your what's your CEO spend rubric in an efficiency market?
Look, so to start with, we have a culture of frugality.
Yeah.
And I think racing is racing, right? What truly matters is, are you able to build strong business foundations, right? Mm-hmm. And today in the midst of the AI bubble and you know, same as it as well, we saw in 2021 and, you know, whatever, right? In the different, I have a little bit of white hair and, you know, so we've seen a few cycles now. We in tech oftentimes forget about what truly matters long term. We are caught up in the fundraising game, in the, you know, let's solve for velocity game. And then we lose sight on the efficiencies that you need to build in the business and what truly matters long term. And we oftentimes overestimate ourselves, right? For a few people, very few exceptions, that game of racing very fast, well ahead of your revenue, pays off, right? And it's okay. And they justify that with, I'm very ambitious and I want a big outcome and because I'm going big and, you know, and it's cool, right? I think it's oftentimes driven by vanity and oftentimes driven by even a delusional approach to company building. I think we in tech oftentimes forget about, you know, the depth of business foundations. And I think we could borrow a lot of inspiration from non-tech companies that compounding over times have built formidable franchises that are enduring and very meaningful. So that's to say, like you raise money and of course you spend money. And if you raise money, it's probably because you're growing and you want to invest faster than your organic growth rate. But hey, don't forget about, like, we raised money when we had tripled our revenue with flat headcount, without investing. There are not that many companies that triple with flat headcount, right? So like it is these obsessions with strong foundations. And then, you raise because you want to do some investments and it's okay. Don't lose sight of that because so many companies are trapped into the, we raise a bunch of money and this and that. And look, most of the time, and this is, this is a fact, most of the time, the story doesn't end up very well. We all feel are very special. Right, we all feel we are above average. The reality is that, you know, we are not.
Nice. So optimistic. Thank you, Julio.
You know, I think it's better to be realistic about company building. You know, you then need to let go of people and it becomes very painful. Like, you know,
I know. It's hard. Yeah.
It's hard. It's very hard, right? It's very hard to get that right. Huh? So, and I'm not claiming we're doing it. So I'm just saying, hey, I think this should be the North Star. And oftentimes in tech, we are so confused. Mm. I think we are so confused, right? So, you know, buying stories that people tell that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. I get it. Julio, I know that you journal daily. Do you still journal daily? I read it somewhere. Nice. You practice, how is it called? Vipassana?
Yeah, Vipassana. Yeah.
Vipassana. Nice.
It's a form of Buddhist meditation. Yeah, meditation.
Oh, nice. And, you know, you also quote Epictetus.
Epictetus, yes. That's Epictetus.
Exactly. Like it's stoic stuff, man. How do these habits, I was just wondering, because you're a leader of a big company, big global company, how do these habits, you know, shape your leadership? You know, also especially as a dad that we just talked off the record of three kids, you know, in New York City scaling globally.
Look, a number of reflections there. So I'll try to be succinct. So I think life is too short, right? Life is short.
Yeah.
And we all want to have a life of meaning and a life of purpose and a life and a life of fulfillment and abundance, right? This is generally what we want. I think we humans are particularly bad at screwing that up, right? Mm-hmm. We end up obsessing with the outcome. We end up focusing too much on the outcome. We are unable to enjoy the process, to celebrate the wins, to, you know, and this is true for entrepreneurs in tech, but also for anybody pursuing a ambitious human endeavor, right? Think of athletes, think of, you know, whoever is pursuing something, you know, that takes a lot of drive to get there. It's very easy to buy that shortcut into unhappiness. It's very easy to fall down that slippery road. And then you realize, hey, you're sacrificing a lot of your own well-being for a goal that, you know, when you put things into perspective, and then when you realize that, hey, maybe you have 50, 60 years that are meaningful here on earth, you know, what are the trade-offs there?
Yeah.
So that's why I anchor and get back into those practices, not only to, you know, hopefully be a better leader, but also to have a more meaningful life and a life that's more impactful. And don't get me wrong, I work very hard. I'm very committed to my outcome and whatever you want. But then it helps you to put things in perspective and be more anchored in life and be driven by your inner compass and not so much about, you know, these stories that we just spoke about, you know, about, you know, fast growth and then vanity metrics and let's raise more money. And, you know, people can get very lost there. So with that said, hey, it obviously helps you to be more focused, more present in the moment. It helps you to listen more and don't react to what people are sharing with you. It keeps you cool when shit hits the fan. Like, you know, so. Obviously, that anchor has a lot of expressions when it comes to being hopefully a more mature and seasoned leader instead of, you know, staying super reactive and so on.
Nice. I like it. It keeps you cool. It makes you Julio, actually, you know, like the cool version of Julio is Julio. That's what I learned off the record. I love the answer. I couldn't agree more. I hope we'll meet in person and discuss this more in depth soon at some point. Julio, this is a kind of a time. Like, this is not kind of like this is the time during the show that I usually play a little game with my guests. It's like I call it rapid fire questions. Quick questions that you give me fast answers. Are you up for playing?
Yes, let's do this.
All right. Awesome. Let's do it. So here we go. One KPI most teams overrate and one they underrate.
Overrated. I think it's pipeline coverage. underrated is WinRig.
Nice. Most valuable non-finance tool for a CFO?
I'm going to go for Charlie Munger here, who I'm a big fan of. His quote is something like, people should calculate less and think more. So that's going to be an invitation of like, you know, question the tooling and spend more time in a strategy and thinking more.
I like it. CFO superpower you wish more teams had?
Can you repeat that one?
CFO superpower you wish more teams had?
Storytelling.
I thought you were going to say Abacum, just as simple as that.
Yes.
Storytelling works well as well. I like it. So speaking about storytelling and generally your passion for stoicism, I would say. Favorite stoic line?
From Epictetus, on the control dichotomy, it's not what happens to you, but how you react about it.
Interesting. Yeah, it's always about reaction, right? Because whatever happens, it's up to you how you react to it. I like it. My wife tells it to me every morning. she's my Epictetus.
Yes, you know we are lucky to have them. Yeah, so she's also a very good reminder for me.
Yes, sir. Okay, last one. Finish this sentence. In 3 years, planning won't be a meeting. It will be
a real time conversation with your data. Then we're gonna get there.
Nice. I love it. Thank you so much, Julio, for joining me today on the podcast. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you. I had so much fun. The audience will love it. I'm sure they will. And I hope to see you soon in person. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Martin. Talk soon.